From the Radio Ranch in the heart of Liberty, Texas, it's the Bombastic Blogcast for Friday, September 13th, 2024. I'm the G-Man, Dan Gallo.
Hey, G-Man.
Hey there yourself. Defender of the peace, keeper of the justice, purveyor of truth, the kid of the patriotic red, white, and blue eyes, and one heck of a nice guy. And since it is Friday, let's do the Hawaiian Shirt Friday fight song. Come on, sing it loud, sing it proud. Sounds so good. Oh, I love that. Truly the sweetest sound this side of heaven. And I'm not going to make a big deal out of it being Friday the 13th because I've never had a bad Friday the 13th. You want to have fun with it? Go ahead, knock yourself out. Let's get things officially started with
the Daily Datagram.
You got it. Words of wisdom, words of inspiration, brain droppings, or noggin nuggets. You get to make the call. It says to accomplish something, the first person you have to defeat is yourself. True that. Once you've done that, your critics will be happy to take over.
Get off my phone, you jerk.
Let's move along now with the so-called educational part of this big blogcast.
Twisted History.
This is it.
Gather around, kids, because a lot of things happen on this day throughout history.
Big stuff.
Some cool, some not so cool.
Oh, boy.
Just the same. You need to know your Twisted History.
Okay.
You might be quizzed.
I don't believe that for a minute. Well, kids, it was on this day in 1956, the IBM 305 Rimac computer was introduced. Now, it was the first commercial computer to use disk storage. Now, the term Rimac, that's all caps, R-A-M-A-C, stood for Random Access Method of Accounting and Control, as its design was motivated by the need for real-time accounting in business. And it was the size of a large office. This thing was huge. Your cell phone has more functions than that big old piece of equipment had back then. And it was on this day in 1985, Super Mario Brothers was released in Japan for the Nintendo Entertainment System, which started the Super Mario series of platforming games, which is nothing short of legendary in our culture.
Staggers the imagination.
The other night during the debate, Kamala Harris was making all kinds of denials about livable fetuses. In other words, babies who are full enough in term to survive outside the womb are not being aborted. And, of course, we all know this is a lie. The far left wants legal abortions up to the point of birth. They want you to be able to kill a baby after it's born. And I don't see us ever allowing that in our society, but it could happen. It could happen. If you don't get off your duff and get out and vote physically at a polling place, it could happen. Thank God for citizen journalism. I don't know who this young lady is, but man, my hat is off to her. She got on the phone and called the Care Clinic of Bethesda, Maryland, claiming that she was 34 weeks pregnant, wanting to know if they could help her. All right, here is the audio from her post on Rumble.
Right, calling the Care Clinic in Bethesda, Maryland.
Thank you for calling, kid. How can I help you?
I am looking to have an abortion.
How far along are you?
I'm 34 right now. I am in a pretty desperate situation. My boyfriend is kind of out of the picture now, so I don't really have any support.
An abortion at any stage is actually much safer than delivering a term pregnancy. It's a 4 to 5 day procedure. We do some basic lab work on you and start to dilate your cervix. After that, we do what we call the fetal injection. A needle is inserted through the abdomen and into the fetal heart where lidocaine is injected, and that will completely numb the fetus so there's no pain. And then after that, we inject a medication called digoxin and another medication called KCL into the fetal heart, which will slow and then stop the fetal heartbeat. And then on that fourth day, depending on how your cervix is dilated, we'll break your water and then we'll give you a medication called misoprostol. Misoprostol will sort of induce contraction and increase the dilation of your cervix. You're going to have contractions and cramping, and then we'll assist you in sort of pushing in the induction, and then remove all of the products of conception. You're definitely going to feel discomfort and cramping and a lot of pressure, but we do give you fentanyl and Versed during the procedure. We specialize in later trimester care. Our doctor is very well versed in what he's doing, and he's very good.
So I'm not like a rare situation. Y'all help women this late in pregnancy all the time?
All the time.
I don't know about you, but I would call that some pretty damning evidence. There are clinics like that all over the country, and they will champion a woman's right to abort a life right up until the day of birth, and maybe even beyond. This is murder. That's all it is. Yeah, I'm anti-abortion, but I'm like Ronald Reagan. You know, in the case of saving the life of the mother, in the case of rape, incest, that sort of thing, exceptions have to be made. Frankly, I like the way it is right now. They've kicked the Supreme Court kicked the matter down to the states, and this is going to be a state issue. But I don't believe that our society is stressing enough the morality side of this argument. And in my lifetime, I mean, I was born in 1948. You can figure out how old I am. But I was born in 1948, and there was a moral code that society in this country used to stick to. It's not there anymore. You know, Sunday mornings in the town where I lived, you get up on Sunday morning and you could hear church bells all over town ringing. You don't hear that sound so much anymore. Church membership, at least traditional church membership, is waning. And there are some reasons for it. But our society has gotten away from the religious or spiritual side of human life. And this is taking a toll. And it's taking a toll on everything. Quality of life isn't what it used to be. Sure, we've got great medical benefits in terms of medical technology, but we have so little access to it. All kinds of medical research being done, benefiting so few people who can afford it. We still haven't nailed down a decent health system. Of course, I've argued for years that the government has no business being in the health system. Let the health system take care of the health system. I mean, I'm from a time where my dad would pay Dr. Gruen for a doctor's visit. When I went to the doctor, Mom paid right there at the window. There was no filing of insurance. Although I remember when insurance started becoming a benefit at my father's place of employment. But, and that was spawned to a great degree by labor unions, which is understandable. If you care to chase down the history of that wormhole, fine. There's an interesting story there to be told. But the morality issue is something that has just been, it's been pushed to the back burner. Thanks to the left and the influence of the left in this country. I saw a great turning point in this country's level of morality after the killing of JFK. Our entire society changed drastically, and morals went with it. And I think a lot of it had to do, too, with my generation. You know, the flower power era, the love-ins. You know, if it feels good, do it. Love the one you're with. That kind of crap. Well, we're paying the price for that these days. But I'm optimistic about it because on November 5th, I see an opportunity for the American people to say enough. The powers that be never seem to do anything about crime or any of the other pressing problems here in America until it starts to really hit home. I'm hoping this is the case. When chaos erupted across Washington, D.C., recently with a Gucci store in city center being looted as part of a broader wave of destruction and general lawlessness that's been sweeping the area. Now, the mayhem, which included multiple acts of vandalism and burglary in Georgetown and other downtown areas, has raised some serious concerns about the rising trend of flash mob robberies across the country. Here again, what do you expect when you allow George Soros to appoint? Basically, that's what he's been doing with his money. He's been appointing DAs who are soft on crime, who believe in no bail for crimes like shoplifting, generally thought to be misdemeanors. And then, of course, you have an open border where you have gangs coming in. Of course, we were talking about Trendy Aragua. It's been coming in from Venezuela. Violent people. And they're taking over apartment complexes. I mean, things are starting to hit close to home. So the Metropolitan Police there, MPD, reported that the incidents began around 11:30 the other night with a group of about 60 people storming the Gucci store at City Center. It's near 10th and I Streets, if you know anything about that area there. And according to reports, the group broke through the doors, the front doors, and started tearing high-end merchandise off security devices, just ripping the security devices. And then they took off. And despite the efforts of law enforcement, the mob escaped. MPD has only confirmed just a few arrests so far, though up to 60 people may have been involved. And these are very organized attacks. Now, there was some video shot. Thank God for citizen journalism. There was also some surveillance video. But the looting wasn't isolated to City Center. Georgetown, which is another upscale neighborhood in D.C., experienced a lot of criminal activity as stores were vandalized and merchandise stolen. And MPD confirmed that the incidents also extended to the H Street corridor and Logan Circle, affecting a wide area of the city. And in response, the cops have increased patrols and drone and helicopter surveillance was deployed to track the movements of the looters. But none of this is going to do any good if, when they drag these people in, they go before the court and the judge grants them low bail or no bail. Now, the timing of this chaos comes just hours after the release of body camera footage showing DC police fatally shooting a local violence interrupter. Now, the video ignited protests, naturally. So here we go. Here we go again. It's the same old scenario. You had your violent clashes between demonstrators and police. And while some protests were peaceful, we'll grant you that, the destructive actions of these groups of looters have left local businesses devastated and residents shaken. You know, these businesses that get hit by this nonsense, by this criminal activity, a lot of them just shut down, refuse to do business in those areas anymore because their insurance companies aren't going to cover this stuff. If you're doing business in an area that's become too violent, it's become a liability, the insurance companies are no longer going to cover you. You can't do business like that. So anyhow, we have this social media footage that captured the scale of the destruction. Windows shattered, damaged storefronts, merchandise strewn across the ground. And meanwhile, you had police and riot gear struggling to contain the mess, the mob. Reports indicate that thieves primarily targeted high-end retailers, with Gucci being one of the hardest hit. The losses in stolen merchandise from Gucci alone are expected to be pretty expensive. Local officials have condemned the violence. Naturally, they always do. "We're just outraged. We're just outraged." And D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser calling for swift justice against those responsible for the destruction. "We will not tolerate lawlessness in our city. Our city's businesses and residents deserve better than the senseless violence and theft." Really? Well, why in the hell don't you do something about it? Right now, law enforcement officials are left with the job of investigating, and they're asking the public for assistance, but in all too often, when the law enforcement organizations ask for help, they're hit with this, "I didn't see nothing, I didn't hear nothing." So they don't get a lot of help. But they're trying to identify those who were involved in the looting. And unfortunately, with the citizen journalism, good as it is, the resolution of the images, especially in video, the resolution of the images is never clear enough to really identify somebody. Plus, these people come in wearing hoodies and masks. Not much to go on there. But this latest incident in the nation's capital just adds to the growing trend of organized retail crime. You've got large groups of individuals. Some of them are these gangs. Often coordinated via social media. That's how they get the word across. Meet us at such and such a place at 8 p.m. We're going in. This thing's going down. And they storm stores and steal huge quantities of merchandise. Over the past year, cities across the country, from L.A. to Chicago, have experienced similar flash mob robberies. And this, of course, puts pressure on both law enforcement and retail chains to ramp up security measures. Sometimes I think what we need is a shoot-on-site policy. If you're inside a store where you don't need to be and you're looting, we're going to shoot you. Save the taxpayers the cost of a trial and housing you in a jailhouse somewhere. We're just going to shoot you. You know this is against the law. We know it's against the law. If you're in there ripping off a store, we'll shoot you. Maybe that's what we need to do. I can tell you this, in the wake of this, residents and business owners alike are calling for more concerted action from local authorities to prevent this sort of thing in the future. I don't know how you prevent it, because you can install all the security you want, and if the mob is big enough, they're going to take it down. But Washington, D.C., already grappling with some pretty serious concerns about crime and general public safety. This looting only heightened the sense of unease, especially in wealthy neighborhoods like Georgetown and City Center. So maybe, just maybe, since this stuff seems to be hitting closer to home, home being, in other words, the place where all our legislators are, where they're supposedly in the business of safeguarding the American people, maybe somebody, somewhere, somehow will figure out how to handle this. In terms of round numbers, some 58 million people watched that debate between Harris and Trump the other night. And this was more than the number who watched Trump and Biden back in June. The way Breitbart reported it, they said the view numbers for the first presidential debate were released on Wednesday, showing a significant rise from the June debate between Trump and Biden. The Nielsen figures show that 58 million people tuned in for the debate between former President Trump and Vice President Harris, roughly 6.5 million more than who watched the debate between Biden and Trump, which likely led to the former's decision to drop from the race. According to Axios, which, by the way, is a left-wing publication, according to Axios, the viewership numbers for Tuesday may rise about 60 million once Nielsen finishes a more comprehensive tally. The highest-rated game in the NFL's opening week averaged 29 million viewers. The debate roughly doubled that. Now, Americans are tuned in to this election, especially now that Harris has replaced Biden atop the Democratic ticket. That was a good note from Axios there. And Trump got good news after the debate, because Reuters interviewed 10 voters, only 10. It's a small sampling, yes, but six said they were voting or leaning toward voting for Trump. Three said the same for Harris, and one was still unsure. Now, does that represent a cross-section of America? I don't know. But Reuters, according to Yahoo News, Reuters interviewed 10 people who were still unsure how they were going to vote in the November 5th election before they watched the debate. Then, six said afterward they were now either going to vote for Trump or were leaning toward backing him. So, there you go. Interesting. I mean, this is no more than wetting the tip of your finger and holding it in the air to see if you can predict the weather. You know, really. Because I've said this time and time again. And that is, polls say one thing. The election always turns out differently. Nick Pope, writing for the Daily Caller, had some interesting news about one of the original founders of Greenpeace telling the Daily Caller News Foundation that he hopes to see Greenpeace USA lose a lawsuit that threatens the group's existence. This is interesting stuff. Now, Patrick Moore, who was listed on Greenpeace's website as one of the original founders as recently as 2007, before the organization attempted to distance itself from him, would like Greenpeace USA to lose the massive lawsuit filed against the group by a company called Energy Transfer. Now, the company is seeking $300 million in damages from Greenpeace USA in a North Dakota lawsuit that alleges the group or its entities incited major protests against Energy Transfer's Dakota Access Pipeline, funded various attacks meant to damage the project, and orchestrated a smear campaign against the company and its development. Now, the way Moore tells the story to the DCNF, he says, they've got to embrace what is really true science. They ignore massively important facts and then make lies up to replace them. So, yes, I hope they're going to learn a lesson from this. Remember, this guy Moore is one of the co-founders of Greenpeace, and he said that science is about truth, and then you decide your policy. Well, these guys, they personally decide the policy, and then they lie about the underlying scientific aspects. It just completely bastardizes science in much of the world, especially in the Western world, and they become sort of spoiled brats, I would say, and they don't have good science. Well, Greenpeace USA would certainly deserve to lose the lawsuit, according to Moore. He says they're basically attempting to destroy the means of transportation and so many other things. There's no doubt about it that pipelines are the safest way to move liquids, especially flammable ones. There's simply no question to it. So this guy Moore is very convinced. I don't imagine he's got a lot of fun out of this task of having to oppose an organization he helped found, but he went on to play a significant role in Greenpeace's Canadian arm, according to Greenpeace. But he left the organization in 1986. That's a long darn time ago, because he felt it had become too radical. And despite listing him as an original founder as recently as 2007, Greenpeace is now an entire website dedicated to explaining that Moore does not represent the organization and that he's not an original founder. Well, Energy Transfer's billionaire executive, a chairman by the name of Kelsey Warren, is behind the company's lawsuit. And the Wall Street Journal reported last Sunday that Warren, who once said that green activists ought to be removed from the gene pool, views climate activists as a significant threat to the energy industry. And he stated that he's unafraid to go after them for the problems they caused for the company and the Dakota Access Pipeline. How about the problems they cause people like you and me, who are paying the price at the pump, we're paying the price at the grocery stores, we're paying the price at clothing stores, we're paying the price for virtually anything and everything that we buy. And meanwhile, some Greenpeace USA top leaders have fought internally about what kind of settlement may be acceptable to reach with the company. But even if Energy Transfer wins the lawsuit, it may be difficult to enforce penalties against Greenpeace's central coordinating body. They're over in the Netherlands, because that entity doesn't hold assets in the U.S. So, here you have the Envir-Nazis trying to bring you and me to our knees by trying to outlaw safe methods of procuring affordable energy for all of us. So who's the bad guy here? Time magazine's been forced to issue a public retraction following the publication of a highly contentious statement mischaracterizing a claim made by Trump during Tuesday night's debate with Harris. The statement, which accused Trump of fabricating an assertion about Harris supporting taxpayer-funded transgender surgeries for illegal immigrants in prison, has now been corrected by the publication. The correction was made following widespread public backlash from those who pointed out that Trump's claim had merit based on Harris's previous positions on gender transition treatments. Now, the mischaracterization occurred in a story titled How Kamala Harris Knocked Donald Trump Off Course, which detailed the back and forth between these two candidates during the debate. During the debate, Trump made a claim stating that Harris, and you may remember this, he made a claim stating that Harris wants to do transgender operations on illegal aliens in prison. And the remark drew immediate reactions from both the media and the public, with a lot of people quick to call it false or exaggerated, but several were able to defend the statement, pointing to Harris's past stances on related issues. Now, in 2019, while running for the Democrat presidential nomination, Harris filled out a questionnaire where she voiced support for taxpayer-funded gender transition treatments for detained immigrants. Think about that concept. My God, the woman's insane. And the questionnaire has now resurfaced, corroborating Trump's debate comment. So here's the correction from Newsweek. The original version of this story mischaracterized as false Donald Trump's statement accusing Kamala Harris of supporting transgender operations on illegal aliens in prison. As a presidential candidate in 2019, Harris filled out a questionnaire saying she supported taxpayer-funded gender transition treatment for detained immigrants. Boy, I love it when time has to eat a big, luscious piece of humble pie. Let's head on over to the Comedy Corner and start the weekend with Zoltan Kazas.
I really am a boring person when I'm home. I just hang out at the house. I hang out with my cat. I got a cat named Jessica. Thank you. I'm a cat person. Are there any other cat people out there? Yeah? Got some cat people here? Nice. I'm guessing the rest of you are dog people. Is that what it is? Yeah. Yeah. I'm not anti-dog. Yeah. Every time I tell someone I'm a cat person, I'm like, what does that mean, you don't like dogs? No, that's not what that means. It just means I like other people's dogs. I like dogs, I just like them over there. And I'll play with them, but then go back over there. I don't like that kind of energy in my house. You know what I mean? That annoying dog, best friend in your face all the time energy. Just like, yeah! I love you! You're home, where have you been? It creeps me out, I don't care for that. I don't like that at all. Just in your face. Like, you want to go out? There's a tree. I know this tree. You want to hang out at this tree? What if I just keep breathing into your face? Ugh. All the time? No, thank you. That's why I like cats. Cats are more like, hey, what are you up to? Never mind. I just remembered I don't care. I'll be in the kitchen. I'll see you later. I like that. I don't need a best friend at the house. I just need like an apathetic roommate that sometimes wants to hang out. Like a dog. You can pet a dog's belly all day. They'll never get tired of it. Just all day. Just like, yeah, man, never stop. You're the best. Hopefully not that creepy, but you get the idea. A cat you can pet for what? 2, maybe 3 seconds? And so it's like, all right, get away from me. All my own things going on. I got a pile of clean laundry to lay on. Get away from me. That's what my cat does. It waits for the pile of clean laundry we haven't folded yet and just rubs on it while making eye contact. Just like, mm-hmm. Everyone's gonna know. So bothersome. My wife, she has a new hobby. She's really into special needs animals. I don't know if that's made its way out here in Provo. If you don't know what special needs animals are, they're animals. They have special needs. That is all. There's this one, Oscar the Blind Cat. It was a cat that was born without any eyes, and they have a like page on Facebook, and my wife goes on there every day and cries. And that's what she does for fun. That's what she does for a good time. And it's weird, because I come home and she's just on the computer, like, ah! And, you know, me being a guy, I always think it's something I did. And then she goes, no. And then she turns the computer, and it's Oscar the Blind Cat. And you're like, look at Oscar. And he's adorable. He has no eyes. Just, ah. And I'm like, oh. And then she goes, I want a special needs animal. I want one. I'm like, you don't ask for one, you get bestowed one. Because I don't know, what do you, you can't just go to the pound and be like, hey, what do you have in the back? Like, that's not how that works.
Have a terrific weekend. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you on Monday's Bombastic Blogcast. Remember, no such thing as spare change, free lunch, or too much horsepower. And you be sure to take some time this weekend to thank the good Lord that you're an American.
You mean that's it?